So now that we know that Texas and Oklahoma will be joining the SEC a year ahead of schedule in 2024, what comes next? What's the timeline for those next steps? And what's best for LSU? We'll get into that plus so much more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, we're on YouTube as well. Listen to us on the go on your preferred podcast platform, or just search Locked On LSU in your YouTube search bar, and you can find us there as well. My name is Caroline Fenton. Appreciate you for joining us today. You can follow me on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. And hey, today's edition of Locked On LSU is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your 2023 goals. So post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/lockedoncollege. Terms and conditions apply. A bunch of news coming out from over the weekend, you know, a clunker on both sides, men and women's basketball. We will get into all of that. But I want to start here because the biggest news, I think, in college football, and especially as far as the SEC is concerned, is that Texas and Oklahoma will join the SEC in 2024, which wasn't a surprise. And it really shouldn't be a surprise. But there has been a whole lot of talk about, is Oklahoma going to be able to come up with the cash to compensate the Big 12, to compensate Fox for leaving the Big 12 early? There was a question. Wasn't quite sure if Oklahoma was going to be able to foot the bill, but it is confirmed, Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC in 2024. And there are going to be some massive, massive changes. Not just happening for LSU, not just happening in the SEC, but happening across college football. When you think about it, the 2023 season is most likely the last season of the new college football that we've all gotten used to. And I don't want to say that it's like the last of college football as we know it, because it seemed like, you know, whenever college football moved to a college football playoff format, you know, 10-ish years ago, it was like, oh my gosh, college football as we know it is completely over with. And then, you know, when there was conference realignment, Missouri and Texas A&M came to the SEC, it was like, oh my gosh, the SEC is going to be completely unrecognizable. But let's not forget that Arkansas and South Carolina weren't founding members either. Let's not forget, once upon a time, Nebraska wasn't in the Big Ten. Let's not forget, once upon a time, Louisville and Pitt weren't in the ACC. So I don't want to act like these are some unprecedented changes happening in college football. Conference realignment happens all the time. Changes to the postseason structure have already taken place, but it is a massive shakeup and a change of, at least to what I've gotten used to, a massive shift from the BCS era to the college football playoff era. And for a couple of years, we were like, oh my God, this is so crazy. This is so weird. Now it's just like every day, you know, it's just totally ingrained in our brains, and it's changed that the way we watch college football. It's not necessarily a bad change or a good change. It's just a change nonetheless, and it's changing how we view the sport. So in 2024, you've got the college football playoff expanding from 4 teams to 12 teams. I think it's excessive. I think it's unnecessary. Not what I want to talk about today. We will talk about that at some point. You've also got USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten, which is a massive shakeup, a massive change. And of course, Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC. So in 2024, college football is going to be completely, completely different. And also one of those changes happening in 2024, along with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, is an inevitable change to the SEC schedule. You're adding in two new teams. Greg Sankey has already expressed his desire to do away with divisions. He talked about that way back when in you know, SEC Media Days 2021, when it was announced that this move could potentially happen, and then it was announced that this move was going to happen. And of course, Greg Sankey doubles down on it on McElroy and Kublik, the radio show in Birmingham, of of Greg Sankey's desire to do away with divisions. Okay, so do away with divisions, you know, so long SEC East, so long SEC West. What does the schedule look like? And those schedule changes obviously depended on a few things. One thing, when are Texas and Oklahoma going to join the SEC? That, you know, obviously, you know, check. They're joining in 2024. We know that now. The second thing is the college football playoff going to expand? And to how many teams? Because let's not act like this expansion of the SEC wasn't also dependent on the expansion of the college football playoff. And also that, you know, reverse it is still true. With the college football playoff expansion, it now allows for more SEC teams to get the opportunity to compete in the playoffs. With more teams in the SEC, now you have more opportunities to get more teams into that those 12 teams. You know, with 12 teams, you still have the opportunity to get more SEC teams. Look at this past year. If we use the 12-team format, it is likely that it could have been Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and LSU, all part of the 12-team conversation. So you add two more teams in there, and you get that many more cracks at it. You get that many more opportunities to be in the big dance. I mean, Oklahoma has been in the college football playoff a lot. You know, they're like the CEOs of the college football playoff semifinals, but never getting to the finals. So that's really what it is the value of the conference increases by bringing in two incredibly valuable brands and also bringing in more value to the conference in terms of competition and in terms of the expanded college football playoff. So now we know two of those things. The college football playoff is expanding in 24. Texas and Oklahoma are joining in 24. So now the next big question is about what you do with scheduling. There are a couple things thrown around if we're going to get away with divisions. The two biggest and biggest storylines are the two most talked about possibilities, one being the 1-7 and the other being the 3-6. What do I mean by that? 1-7 is you continue with an 8-game SEC schedule each year. That's where we're at right now, where you play the 6 teams in your division, and then you play 2 out-of-division games, your 1 permanent and your 1 rotating. For LSU, that's every team in the West, Florida, and then insert other East team there. So if you do the 1-7 format, you continue the same style of schedule of an 8-game conference schedule, but you have 1 permanent opponent and you have 7 rotating opponents. So only one of those rivalries is going to be protected. The other option is 3-6. Where you add a conference game into each SEC team's schedule, you have 3 permanent rivalries, 3 permanent rivals every year, which would maintain some of those kind of secondary rivals. Like and what I mean by that is, you know, Alabama and Auburn is a primary rival. Alabama and Tennessee or Alabama and LSU, those are more secondary rivals. Ole Miss LSU is a secondary rivalry to Ole Miss Mississippi State, if you're catching my drift here. So the 3 permanent rivals would maintain some of those secondary rivalries, but you're looking at adding another conference game into the schedule. So that wouldn't necessarily benefit teams like Vanderbilt, who really rely on that extra non-conference game to at least get a few more wins on the schedule and to maybe, you know, give yourself that much more of an opportunity to become bowl eligible. I look at Missouri as being another program like that that really kind of relies on those out-of-conference games to become bowl eligible and to rack up some more wins on the schedule. The 8 or 9-game schedule, which one would be better for LSU? It depends on how you look at it, because I think that there are pros and cons each way. And I want to get into that coming up next. What's the best schedule construction for LSU, and where do you go from there? I'll get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about LinkedIn Jobs. It's such a wonderful tool if you're a hiring manager, if you're a small business owner, because you want to get the right people in your business with your company to help you start 2023 on the right note. So LinkedIn Jobs will help you do that by hiring qualified candidates more efficiently and by matching open roles with the people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. I use LinkedIn Jobs whenever the radio station that I work for, we needed to find a producer and we needed to fill that role really quickly. So I went to LinkedIn Jobs, one, because it's free, two, because it's easy, and three, because we needed to hire that person really quickly. And I didn't want to have to sit at my computer and filter through all of these candidates who didn't have any experience or didn't have the right expertise that we were looking for. No, I just wanted to see the right candidates that had exactly what I was looking for. And LinkedIn has the data and has the tools to do exactly that. It helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with the targeting tools by going beyond resume data and using insights from your job post and your company with the 875 million member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates. It is super easy. You can screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications all on one platform. So it's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedoncollege. That is linkedin.com/lockedoncollege to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Make sure you check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Everything that you need to know about college basketball all in one place. And the guys who host this show are seriously the best. You're going to love it. You're going to get smarter. You're going to laugh. So you can hear from big name experts, insiders, coaches, and players on Locked On College Basketball. Available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. So looking at the inevitable schedule changes that are going to happen in the SEC in 2024 and beyond, what's the most beneficial for LSU? And what's the best avenue and path for the SEC? Let's look at the SEC first. So we know in 2024, Texas and Oklahoma are joining, the college football playoff is expanding, the SEC schedule is going to change. What also changes is that now ESPN in 2024 will have exclusive rights to the SEC's games. So now ESPN is another player in this situation. So if the SEC wants to adopt the 3-6 format and add one more SEC game, will ESPN pay each member school more? Will the SEC get more money from ESPN if the SEC is going to be pumping out more quality games? Because you could look at that extra conference game on the schedule and you could say, okay, well, let's say a Georgia-Texas A&M game is going to be much, much, much more of a valuable product to ESPN than, say, a Georgia-Akron game, which, you know, it's a likely scenario that could happen with that fourth out-of-conference game. So that's something to ask is, what is ESPN willing? How much is that extra conference game worth to ESPN? And is the SEC willing to add that extra conference game, even if it doesn't mean extra money? Because this was a deal that was agreed upon before the 1-7 or 3-6 conference game schedule scenario came about. So will that extra game, if the SEC does adopt a 3-6 format, will that be worth enough to ESPN that they will up the ante and that ESPN will pay more for these games? If so, more money for the SEC, which means more money for LSU, and that's a good thing. If it doesn't mean more money, you're still getting more money most likely from ESPN than you are getting now. It is still a bigger deal. And more eyes on ESPN's product, which would likely come if you add that extra conference game, because those conference games are going to be way more interesting than any out-of-conference game, most likely, the LSU-Florida State game was a very, very widely watched game. But overall, you're probably playing more cupcakes than you are other out-of-conference Power 5 teams. So that's one thing. The best thing for the SEC, which then would be the best thing for LSU, is if ESPN agrees to pay more for that extra conference game. And I think the other thing to look at it too is LSU doesn't necessarily need that fourth out of conference game. LSU is a competitive enough team that LSU doesn't have to, keep their fingers crossed that they can make a bowl game because they play, you know, nobody State University week seven of the season. LSU is not one of those programs. Like I mentioned, Vanderbilt, it's probably on their radar. Vanderbilt is probably championing for an eight-game conference schedule. So Vanderbilt doesn't have to add another SEC opponent on their schedule. And Vanderbilt can elect to play a lesser opponent. It's the and I use Vanderbilt. I pick on Vanderbilt because they're the most obvious example. But I think that every program has benefited from it or will benefit from it at some point or another. At some point or another, it's going to be inevitable that there is another team in the SEC that really needs that fourth out-of-conference game to get to a bowl game or to extend to 10 wins, whatever it might be. So that's something to look at as well. LSU doesn't need eight games. LSU can be competitive with nine games. It could even be better for LSU to play nine games because then you get that other added opportunity to play a conference opponent, to play a more valuable opponent when it comes down to, or if it comes down to, you know, you could be either number 12 or 11 in 12 or 13 rather in the final rankings. Well, if LSU plays Georgia or Auburn or whoever it might be left on their schedule versus, let's say I'm picking a random team, Utah, they play Washington State. Well, then LSU would have the more valuable win. So it really does benefit LSU more to play the nine-game schedule. But all of that being said, the nine-game conference schedule, all of that being said, who picks the three opponents? That's the next question that I have, is I think it would benefit LSU the most to play the 3-6 schedule. But how much of a say does LSU get to have in who those opponents are? How much does Scott Woodward's voice matter? Like, does every athletic director, every school president, you know, rank a list? Like, you're going through a sorority recruitment and you get matched for, you know, your top three opponents that you'd like to play every year? How much of a say does ESPN have in this? Now that ESPN has exclusive rights to the conference's games, if I'm ESPN, I kind of like to say, hey, you know, these are some matchups that we have valued a lot in the past because of how many eyes it draws. So if ESPN has a say in it, don't you think that ESPN might want LSU and Alabama to play every single year? Seeing as though that is the most watched single matchup in the last 10 to 15 years? Seeing as though that was the most watched SEC game on ESPN in 2022? Of course, that doesn't account for the CBS games that were watched so much. I mean, like the Tennessee-Alabama game, Tennessee-Georgia game, those were all watched more than Alabama-LSU was. But looking at the network, its most watched SEC game, second most watched game on the network in 2022 was Alabama-LSU. So how much of a say does ESPN have in it, considering it's going to be their product? You know, what are, you know, ultimately the SEC officials have final say. Greg Sankey and his people in the powers that be within the Southeastern Conference are going to have final say. But what do they prioritize? Do they want input from around the conference? Are they willing to agree to, or are member schools willing to agree, or is the SEC willing to agree to have some schools that are a little bit more stacked than others just simply to maintain rivalries? I mean, you would look at, let's say, I think the most obvious 3-6 pairings and permanent rivals in the SEC, I think the most obvious is Alabama, Tennessee, LSU, Auburn. They have a song about it, but is the SEC going to put those three really key marquee games and pretty difficult opponents to one school and take an opportunity away from, let's say, maybe a Vanderbilt or a Mississippi State, schools that don't have those rich, rich rivalries that go so far back? Are they going to take an opportunity for, let's say, a Kentucky-LSU matchup, which isn't a rivalry, but it might be a little bit more of an attractive game than maybe a Kentucky Vanderbilt. You know what I mean? Like, are they going to stack some of those games so heavy for some opponents and then have other opponents play lighter opponents or easier opponents or maybe not as big of brands every year? And I don't know what they prioritize, but that's another question that I have in terms of these matchups is, what do you prioritize and who gets a say? Does everyone's opinion matter? Does nobody's opinion matter? Is this simply Greg Sankey playing college football God and say, those are your three teams, deal with it? And I don't know the answer to that question, but if that's going to be the best thing for LSU, which I think it will be, because I think that the 3-6 model means more money for everybody and more eyes on LSU's product and a more competitive schedule for LSU, I'm here for it. But who gets the say? Who gets to make these decisions? I don't know. And that's kind of why I don't like this. I think it's good for LSU and I think it's the best thing for LSU, but I don't like it because who's in charge here? Who has final say? Coming up next, got some weekend updates on the hardwood. We will get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about Built Bar. Because if you're looking for a delicious treat, if you have a sweet tooth like I do, but you don't want to sacrifice all the fat, all the calories, and all your macros, you've got to try Built Bar. Because with Built Bar, it is the best of both worlds. Built Bars are healthy and actually tasty. Like, they're so delicious that you won't even think that they're good for you. You'll feel like you're being bad because it feels like you're eating a candy bar, but they're perfect for your New Year's resolution because they're covered in 100% real chocolate. It'll satisfy that sweet tooth, and they come in delicious candy bar-esque flavors, churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. They're all delicious. So they're so good, but they're so good for you too. Only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. So what I do at the beginning of every day, I'll throw one in my backpack, throw in my bag, and I'll eat it throughout the day, and it'll keep me full for hours and keep me going for the busy day that I have ahead. So now you don't have to wait around to get a box. For years, we have been talking about ordering your Built Bars at Built.com, but now you can get them at your local Walmart or Sam's Club. So if you head to Walmart, go to the pharmacy section, grab yourself a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, or coconut puffs. Or if you're closer to a Sam's Club, you can run in there, grab a 13-bar box. You can bulk up with the hit flavors, brownie batter, and churro. You can thank me later. All right, let's do a little bit of a weekend update, a little bit of a weekend roundup. 2 losses on the hardwood, 1 for the men, 1 for the women, but it came in 2 very different ways. And I'll start with the women. Because this was probably the most anticipated women's basketball game of the season so far. Number 1 ranked undefeated South Carolina. Number 3 ranked Number 3 ranked undefeated LSU. LSU going on the road at Columbia, taking on Dawn Staley and the absolute powerhouse of a South Carolina team. And LSU got their butts whooped. Got that butt whooped. 88-64 final score. LSU falls from number 3 to number 5 in the country, falling only 2 spots, which answered my question of, are people still going to take LSU seriously, even given this pretty bad loss? Are people still going to believe in this LSU team, even when they're stacked up against the top team in the country? They very clearly showed a gap between elite number 1 team in the country and where LSU is right now. This shows me the fact that LSU only fell 2 spots. It shows me that there is still very much so a belief in this team. It shows me that this team is still one of the best in the country, but South Carolina is just that good. South Carolina is just that much bigger, is just that much stronger, is just that much more aggressive, is just that much faster. That's really the biggest takeaway that I took away from that game on Saturday was from the very beginning, it was South Carolina's game. From the very beginning, South Carolina was controlling that game. And South Carolina was just played so quick and so aggressive. And I think that South Carolina is absolutely the best team in the country based off of what I saw on Sunday. I don't know if there's a team, and I'm not a Stanford expert. I'm not a UConn expert. I don't watch those teams week in and week out, but just based off of what I saw from South Carolina and what I know about this LSU team to be true, this is a damn good team, that South Carolina looks unbeatable at this point. That they can make an LSU team that has looked so dominant all season long. Look how they did on Sunday. I don't know if there's a team in the country that can compete with South Carolina. So while I think we can all still feel good about this team, I think Sunday pointed out that this team still has a ways to go. This team still has some talent collecting to go. There is still a very obvious division between LSU and South Carolina, and that's okay. But it was on full display on Sunday. Hard-fought game. And that's another thing that I really appreciate about this LSU team is they never give up. They never stop fighting. They never stop playing physically. That's what I saw on Sunday. Even when the game started to get more and more and more out of hand, I felt like this team never quit, but they showed a whole lot of fight on Sunday. So tough loss, you know, tough to swallow. And I think it was a benchmark game for LSU of, look, we are one of the top teams in the country, but that gap is just a little bit more obvious now. The game that wasn't as fun to watch, at least a half wasn't fun to watch. The other half was actually really fun to watch, was the men's game, fully taking on A&M. The first half was truly disgusting, like truly gross. LSU scored 12 points in 18 minutes. Let that sink in. Scored the half 41-17. I watched that game and I was like, oh my God, this is disgusting. Like, this game is so hard to watch. And I was like, this game is going to be brutal. Like, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch the rest of this game because this first half was so awful. And I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I stuck it out because LSU in the second half, I think that was probably the best half of basketball I've seen this team play. Maybe since Arkansas, maybe it was even better than Arkansas, but it was the best half that I've seen this team put together in a long time. But it just wasn't enough. The second half shooting looked good. They were aggressive in the second half. They played well in the second half. I felt like they communicated well in the second half. But it just, you set yourself back that far in the first half, and it's tough for anybody to overcome. Down 41-17 at the half, and then you come back and you fall 74-62. While the final score might look like it was, Texas A&M was the better team, and they were, I think that you have to give credit to the turnaround that LSU had at the half. I don't know what Matt McMahon said in the locker room. I don't know what those guys said in the locker room in the second half to turn it around because they did. It just wasn't good enough. You're not going to be able to win very many games when you're down by almost 30 points at a half. But now they fall to 12 losses in a row. They're at the bottom of the SEC, 1-11 in SEC play. They haven't won a game since that game against Arkansas. So pretty rough for LSU. Pretty rough. But like I said, you just have to take the baby wins where you're going to get them. I know that all of these losses in a row are brutal. I know that your interest in this team is probably wavering. It is for me too. Sometimes you just there's only so much losing that you can endure. There's only so much losing that you can watch. But we all knew this, at least I knew this going into the season, that it was going to be bad. There was a lot of making up that this team had to do. Take the baby wins where you can get them, but it's not fun to watch this team right now. Not fun at all. But it's going to be really fun to watch LSU baseball. They are starting off the season on Friday. So we'll continue to get into some baseball talk throughout the week. So make sure to stay tuned for all of that. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen today. For your second listen, check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. The experts, my favorite guys, Isaac Shade and Andy Patton, bring you everything that you need to know on and off the court. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, coaches, and players throughout the basketball landscape. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.